It's Wednesday, March 31st, and $2 trillion was just the beginning. We start here. In what he believes will be his FDR moment, President Biden prepares to push for a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure plan.
He will argue that this is really a moment to try and reimagine a new American economy.
But who pays for it, and can he pass it without Republicans? A congressman acknowledges he's dealing with the FBI. The question is over what?
What is happening is an extortion.
He's reportedly being looked at for sex trafficking. We'll tell you what we know. And who has the right to know if you've been vaccinated?
Will they ever be able to travel?
The debate is on to decide who gets the stamp of approval on vaccine passports. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Here's the political lesson of the day that you really did not need my help on. People really like getting things paid for by the government. Yesterday, North Carolina Republican Madison Cawthorn happily announced to his constituents that their district has received government grants. The only thing is,
that's not what we are as conservatives. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not going to come up here and promise you free things.
He voted no on the bill that sent them there.
It obviously wasn't easy. It wasn't always pretty. But it was so desperately needed.
This was part of the American Rescue Plan. You remember the $1.9 trillion relief bill that President Biden signed into law after it passed through the Senate through reconciliation. That's the rule where once a year, you can pass a big budget measure with 50 votes instead of 60. And this bill got little Republican support. At least, that's how we've always thought of reconciliation. Once per year.
I don't think he doesn't get a single Republican vote, and drama of the last 24 hours, including what Senator Manchin will tell you about the next 4 years.
They're going to be good. I'm going to succeed. We're going to succeed moving forward. Look.
But President Biden clearly thought that this effort was so successful that later today he is set to unveil a new proposal with the same strategy in the same year and an even bigger dollar figure. Infrastructure Week has returned to the White House, but this time, would something actually come out of it? ABC's senior White House correspondent Mary Bruce is with us. Mary, what is this announcement going to be today?
Well, this is Joe Biden in Pittsburgh this afternoon outlining a massively ambitious and massively expensive jobs and infrastructure plan. He'll describe this as the first of two packages to try and overhaul and rebuild the economy. At its core, though, this is a jobs bill, right? Biden believes, and he will argue, that this is really a moment to try and reimagine a new American economy. He's going to be speaking in these sweeping kind of platitudes, right? The White House has described this as a once-in-a-century kind of investment in America to meet the needs of infrastructure, but also to try and jolt the economy and grow jobs.
Certainly investing in, we've talked about this a little bit, roads, rails, and bridges is part of it. The president believes that we can do that in a way where we can create good-paying, clean energy jobs, union jobs.
So what are we really talking about here? We are talking about a roughly $2 trillion plan. That's just the first part of this. And this is the part where we really think about traditional infrastructure, right? Rebuilding roads and rails and bridges. They're planning to invest $620 billion in transportation infrastructure. They want to modernize 20,000 miles of highways and roads, you know, fix some of those big economically significant bridges that are in desperate need of repair and reconstruction.
So some of it is certainly infrastructure shovel-ready projects. Some of it is how do we expand broadband access?
But then they're also calling to invest in what they call the care economy. So $400 billion in financial assistance to caregivers and expanding access to home-based care. They also want to invest $580 billion in manufacturing and training. So this goes well beyond, I think, what a lot of people think of when they just sort of think of shovel-ready infrastructure projects. And that's because Biden and a lot of his Democratic supporters are insisting that now is the moment to go big. More than $2 trillion big. And of course, this is just part one of two packages to try and boost the economy. So the total price tag here is going to be many trillions, with a T, dollars.
Well, and so the question clearly becomes then, How do you pay for it, Mary? Which I guess is weird to talk about because, like, Republicans did not have the same concerns when President Trump passed huge tax cuts for corporations, let's be honest. But that doesn't mean it's not a real issue that really could divide Democrats, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that Republicans aren't eager to say that they've got some big issues now, because Joe Biden wants to pay for this by hiking taxes. And that is pretty much a non-starter for Republicans.
Will you raise taxes?
I will raise taxes for anybody making over $400,000. Let me tell you why I'm going to do it. It's about time they start paying a fair share of the economic responsibility we have.
Look, Joe Biden has not been shy about the fact that he thinks that taxes need to be raised and that he wants to reverse a lot of the Trump era tax changes. So we know that Biden has said he wants to raise taxes on the most wealthy and big corporations. He said in the past, though, promised that anyone making less than $400,000 a year will not see their taxes go up. What he's proposing today is really an effort to try and fundamentally reform the corporate tax code.
It's the responsible thing to do, to propose a way to pay for that over time. So, and he also believes that there's more that can be done to make the corporate tax code fair.
The short answer is I'd love to do an infrastructure bill. I'm not interested in raising taxes across the board on America. I think it will send our economy in the wrong direction. Hopefully, they don't choose that path, but they may.
At the same time that you have Republicans already saying this is never going to happen because they don't ever want to raise taxes, you also have some Democrats raising concerns that this massive plan doesn't go far enough.
Year after year, nothing happens, and we continue to grossly underfund our nation's physical infrastructure.
They want to go even bigger, and part of that is that they say that not every single dollar has to be paid for, because they argue that infrastructure, some of these projects, by creating jobs, will end up paying for themselves effectively.
If infrastructure spending goes up, GDP and household incomes grow.
We'll see where economists land on that. But the bigger picture is that, look, the 50-50 split in the Senate isn't changing, right? The balance of power in Washington is still the same. This is a much bigger package than what we just saw, that stimulus bill, that nearly $2 trillion package. This is harder than that. This is going to be a much
more bruising. Can you do this with just 50 votes, man? Like, you can just keep on doing this kind of reconciliation thing over and over?
Not necessarily, Brad. And that's part of the issue here, right?
But let's talk raw politics here. You didn't get a single Republican vote for tax cuts. How are you going to get a Republican vote for a tax increase?
Well, I may not get but I'll get the Democratic votes for a tax increase.
It's hard to look at this plan, even in the broad strokes that we know so far, and to see how Democrats are going to be able to reach that necessary 60-vote threshold in the Senate. And that's why you're already seeing Democratic leader Chuck Schumer try and pursue this really unusual maneuver to try and pass some of this plan through that reconciliation so that you can use that budget process, get it down to being able to pass it just along party lines. But again, even getting this through on party lines is going to take some work. So yet again, Washington this morning is gearing up for what is going to be a massive political slugfest.
Yeah, there's like a legacy-making moment for Joe Biden that isn't all about coronavirus. This is the start of it right here. All right. Mary Bruce in Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Now, the other big story in Congress today is a news report last night that a prominent Republican congressman, Matt Gaetz from Florida, is under federal investigation for sex trafficking. Let's quickly go to ABC's John Santucci from our investigative unit. John, Matt Gaetz is not the most powerful member of Congress, but he's certainly a well-known one. I mean, what do we know about this apparent investigation?
He's a well-known one, Brad. He's a close ally of former President Trump's. And the New York Times reported on Tuesday night that Gaetz is actually the subject of a Department of Justice probe. It's been going on for some months, going back, actually, sources telling ABC News, to the summer, Brad. And it's an investigation into whether Gaetz had a relationship with a 17-year-old girl, a minor. Now, obviously, a insane accusation in any case, but this is a congressman that is no stranger.
Some have cited the metaphor that the president lit the flame. Well, they lit actual flames. Actual fires, and we
time
put them out.
Expired. There will be order.
This is a junior level congressman, but he has been out there on television, defended President Trump vigorously over the course of the last several years. But now to see this accusation coming out and to see this has been a probe going on for some time is just remarkable.
Congressman, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Gates is denying this, Brad. He was on Fox News last night.
It is a horrible allegation, and it is a lie.
Blasting the Department of Justice, saying that this is all a scheme, that there is someone out there to get him.
What is happening is an extortion of me and my family.
Also claimed there were allegations of a shakedown, people trying to extort him and his family for money.
Providing for flights and hotel rooms for people that you're dating who are of legal age is not a crime.
Says that he had no such relationship, but is aware, Brad, of the investigation. Did know that this was something the Department of Justice was looking into.
Well, and it was bizarre, really, watching this interview with Tucker Carlson, because, you know, you'd think friendly interviewee on this conservative show. However, Tucker Carlson seemed almost befuddled as he's asking Matt Gaetz the obvious question, wait, have you ever had any sort of relationship with a teenager, with a 17-year-old? And instead of saying, hey, I'm a 38-year-old man, I've never been involved in anything close to that, I don't know where they got that. Instead, he was much more specific with his language. He would say things like, you know, I've never traveled with anyone around this time, or, you know, I've never with a 17-year-old, didn't mention other ages. It was not as much of a categorical, specific denial to this report as you might have expected.
Well, that was because what the New York Times report says, Brad, is that part of the DOJ investigation into the alleged relationship is that Gates paid for travel for this 17-year-old to join him on trips, to go with him on vacations. There's a lot here, but that's where it could be a charge of trafficking a minor.
Oh, that's where trafficking comes in, is the travel.
That's the element, is the travel.
The New York Times is running a story that I have traveled with a 17-year-old woman, and that is verifiably false. People can look at my travel records and see that that is not the case.
Now, we should know, Brad, the Department of Justice has not confirmed this report to ABC News. They've actually not responded to any requests for comment. Gates, as I mentioned, has been all over conservative media denying these allegations. But this is going to be a wild story we're going to have to keep our eyes on.
All right, John Santucci, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, would you rather have the government tracking your vaccinations or a corporation? The conundrum over vaccine passports after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Scientists have said for the rest of this year, the big COVID-19 battle is the race between vaccines and variants. Well, recently, the data show variants seem to be spreading rapidly.
The coronavirus on the rise in more than half this country. Cases up 15% in the last 2 weeks.
Lifting all these restrictions, telling people not to wear masks, gathering in large crowds, that's the equivalent of playing with fire.
This week, officials in Texas noted that as cases rise, close to 90% of the cases they're seeing are the UK variant. And yet, in Texas, as well as several other states, there is still no mandate to wear masks, no mandate to limit public gatherings. It's really up to private companies to tell you what to do, which is why, more and more, you're hearing about vaccine passports becoming a reality in this country. Now, I want to turn to Nicole Hassoun. She's a professor of philosophy and ethics at Binghamton University in New York and Cornell University. She's been raising concerns about what the next year could look like. So, Professor Hassoun, we've established companies have pretty wide latitude to require customers to get vaccinated, right? So is a vaccine passport, is that just proof of that? Like, how would this work?
Yeah, I mean, so the EU has recently announced a proposal for a digital health pass. The Biden administration is developing guidelines for immunity passport systems. And some U.S. states like New York are already providing or working on apps to provide a passport. So this is definitely going to be a reality in the United States in some form or another.
The state says it has successfully tested it out at a recent Brooklyn Nets game at the Barclays Center and a Rangers game at Madison Square Garden.
It works by showing a barcode on your phone or a printout to prove you've been vaccinated.
I think we need to pay attention to what the private sector is doing and potentially regulate their behavior, because individual freedom shouldn't be a business proposition.
Well, and just so we're clear, is this something it sounds like the Biden administration doesn't want this to be like a government thing. That just doesn't look good. So is this just going to be something we see from private companies then?
I think that there's both. So big tech, big travel companies have been lobbying the U.S. government for a long time to get these passports and developing apps that you'll probably see. And there's a question about exactly how they'll be used here.
U.S. Airlines asking the White House to develop federal guidance for temporary health credentials that would keep track of travelers' negative COVID tests and proof of vaccination.
It's currently going through an interagency process. We'll make some recommendations, and then we believe it will be driven by the private sector.
The Biden administration is leaving it largely to the private sector, so it sounds like. So developing guidelines for immunity passport systems, not putting one in place directly.
So we'll leverage our resources to ensure that all vaccination credential systems meet key standards, whether that's universal accessibility, affordability, availability, both digitally and on paper. But those are our standards.
What are the concerns that you might have when you hear about private companies working on this?
Yeah, well, I think it's understandable that employers want to ensure that their staff and customers feel safe, right? But their actions have significant or can have significant effects on other people's lives.
Qantas has announced all international passengers may soon be mandated to start getting the COVID-19 vaccination in order to fly.
Talking to my colleagues in other airlines around the globe, and I think it's going to be a common theme across the board.
I don't think it's okay for a travel company or an airline to say someone can't fly to visit a dying parent because they pose some risk to others if the person's willing to take precautions and get tested. The risks we pose to others will be limited and become more and more limited as more and more people are vaccinated and people are choosing whether to fly. And so I think, you know, we can require people to get tested, but we need to have at least some exceptions and passport systems for them to be ethical.
Another hurdle, which vaccines will be accepted for international travel?
We have so many different vaccine candidates around the world. They have different levels of efficacy.
Another thing is that, you know, companies are going to make money from these passport systems if we have them as, you know, apps and don't just use paper systems. And then we've got a whole bunch of potential privacy issues that come up and data security issues.
Your CDC vaccination cards could be lost, stolen, or copied.
We're faced with the biggest data challenge, if you want to call that a puzzle, of our lifetimes, and it's based on trust.
If we let companies, you know, put password systems in place, either to appear safe, if we're not sure that they're actually making people that much safer, you know, they may face competitive pressures to keep doing that. And again, you know, the technology firms have a financial incentive to keep in business and to sell their apps and then to sell potentially health data as well.
And while there are 17 apps being developed in the United States, DePaul University professor Greg Klugman says there should be a universal one used worldwide.
If the WHO came out with, you know, the definitive app that would be recognized all over the world, that would make life easiest for all of us.
Well, and I was chatting up our colleague Stephanie Ebbs about this, who had been reporting on vaccine passports a while ago, and she said one of the reasons the White House feels like it needs to step in here is there are incentives for private companies that the government wouldn't have. So, like, if a private company works with Apple, what do you know? You might only see vaccine passports on iOS devices, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, like, that's the only person who can come into this concert. Is that part of the issue as well?
There's issues about whether or not the different systems are going to work together, and that's one of the major challenges. But there's inherent risks in technology of people stealing data, of people using it for other purposes. Members of marginalized groups might be at increased risk of serious scrutiny. And half the apps out there, I've seen some reports that suggest half of them don't provide much data security. So they might provide it to government agencies upon request.
New York is alone in its venture right now and is relying on businesses and people to sign up. The state also adds a disclaimer that information could be used by third parties they're working with and isn't protected by HIPAA.
I think people are potentially in the U.S. going to lose freedom with vaccine passports. It's not the case that, you know, we're exiting lockdown or something. We're getting extra freedom. We're going to lose freedom that we currently have with those passport systems if we can no longer fly or we can no longer enter public space without them. And we have to keep in mind that some people simply can't access vaccines at all. Either they're not eligible right now or they have health reasons and may never be able to get a passport. So,
like people who are like allergic to a vaccine. Like there are people who are really legitimately allergic to these vaccines, say.
And more than just, you know, that, you know, people may have immune conditions. There's a variety of reasons why people may not be able to access a vaccine ever. And this doesn't, you know, isn't restricted to the United States. There's people in rich countries who aren't going to be able to travel. But then there's people, you know, in poor countries who may never get a vaccine. And if we have a passport system for flights, you could say, like, will they ever be able to travel?
I also wonder, it's like, okay, you're going to do this. And then what, give all this information to some big corporation? You want the fox to guard the hen house? I mean, give me a break.
So in Florida, right, Governor Ron DeSantis, he has said, he came out this week and basically said, you know what, we're going to ban vaccine passports. They're not going to happen in the state of Florida. You can't mandate them. You can't require. Like, do you agree with that then? Is that the way to go? Just no thank you?
I mean, I wouldn't put them in place. I think we should regulate how they're used. And I think we need to find ways of compensating people if we do put them in place, ensuring that they're kind of exceptions for people who have really good reasons to travel, maybe even vaccinating people on arrival to the United States. If we're going to say, you know, you can't travel unless you're vaccinated.
It's completely unacceptable for either the government or the private sector to impose upon you the requirement that you show proof of vaccine to just simply be able to participate in normal society.
If it's immunity passports or a health system collapse, that's, you know, that's one thing. If it's immunity passports or some airline companies might not make quite as much money, that's a different thing. And then, you know, even asking, like, will they make less money? It's going to require some people not to fly and maybe other people feel safer and will fly. But what are the net effects? Are there good health reasons, good economic reasons to put them in place? And I just haven't seen a strong ethical case made for them. And I don't think we have data enough to establish the health benefits or the economic benefits that people claim for them.
Yeah, and we've heard more and more, I think, from scientists that, like, it's not like next year we're going to suddenly stop being like, are you immune from COVID? Like, this goes on for several years in the future. So, Professor Hassoun, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And one last thing. Do not believe someone who tells you today is April Fool's Day. They're trying to fool you. It's confusing, I know, but this is the three-dimensional chess you have to play when it comes to April 1st this year, which, for the record, is tomorrow, but it might have already gotten the best of people.
Several reports now say Volkswagen plans to drop the K in its name, replace it with a T, and become Volkswagen.
On Monday, CNBC got a hold of a leaked document saying the car company Volkswagen was about to rename itself. Yeah, this press release said that from now on in the U.S., the company will now be known as Volkswagen, like electric volts, which seemed weird. So much so that people started asking, wait, is this supposed to be an April Fool's joke?
I don't know. Everybody was kind of confused about whether this was real or not.
It seems like it's a very ambitious thing to rename the company.
Well, yesterday, the company emphatically, publicly said no. They were doubling down, claiming this is real. You will see this name on all its electric vehicles. But later last night, the company issued another statement saying, just kidding. Ha ha. And all this might just be seen as overzealousness by brands. Remember, last year, a bunch of big companies decided not to go big on April Fool's Day because it wasn't a particularly funny moment in time. So it makes sense that this year, they would be trying to snag headlines by jumping in front of each other earlier and earlier. You know, like Black Friday, but for really corny pranks.
But it hits a little different coming from Volkswagen.
The world's largest automaker now apologizing after confessing to rigging software to cheat on emission tests.
Remember, this is a company that is still dealing with the fallout from a massive emissions cheating scandal, where certain eco-friendly features would only work when cars were being tested.
Meaning the car would emit illegal levels of pollutants up to 40 times higher than allowed.
We really wanted an environmentally responsible car.
Is it criminal?
It does feel criminal.
This is a company which has apologized for being dishonest with its customers and is now saying, gotcha, over a name change. Not everyone's amused. And that's the thing about April Fool's Day. When you lie on April 1st, it's a prank. When you do it on any other day, it's still a lie. By the way, when was the last time an April Fool's Day prank was big enough for you to hear about? Because it just went so spectacularly well. Like, it is a small strike zone, guys. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow. Promise.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much I've done.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.